Have you ever had a supermarket shopping trolley that went in the direction you wanted it to go? If your experience is anything like mine, no matter how carefully you choose your shopping trolley, it tends to be the one that has the wobbly wheel that takes it anywhere but the way you want it to go. Shopping trolleys in supermarkets are much like us. They have a bias away from the right way. And that is the way of the human heart. God made us, I'm sure, like the manufacturers of the shopping trolley, to go in a perfect direction. But somehow, somewhere along the line, that has become broken, spoiled, marred, defective. How it happens to shopping trolleys, I'm not sure. But the Bible makes it quite clear to us how it has happened to the human heart. That with the disobedience of the first man and woman to the commands of God, all of humanity has fallen into a state of rebellion against God. And therefore, their bias is away from God rather than towards God. No matter how many rules you may make for yourself to keep your direction on the straight and narrow path, in your own strength and by your own ingenuity, you are bound to veer off either to the left or to the right. The book of Proverbs presents us with wisdom that is intended to help us to stay on the right way. But you can start with the book of Proverbs and work your way through and memorize each of its profound sayings. But as we saw last week, unless you get the starting point right, the Proverbs will not help you very much. As we observed in the seventh verse of the first chapter, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. That's where we need to start, with a right relationship with God, with awe and reverence towards our Creator, with a love for Him and a true desire to serve Him and to follow His instructions. And it is on that foundation, on that basis then, that we must observe, understand, and apply the Proverbs of this book. To help us to see the importance of this, the book begins with a series of dialogues, a series of extended discussions on the subject of wisdom, what it is and what it means. And it's this evening that we're going to begin to look at these dialogues, having last week looked at the prologue, the initial opening comments, which gave us the purpose of this book. And so this evening we're going to be looking briefly at verses 8 through 19 of the first chapter of the book of Proverbs. In these initial dialogues, we have a number of people who speak to us, and the first who come are the parents, a father and a mother. They are, though, not just any father or mother. They are indeed a representation of wisdom. It is wisdom who is speaking. And so, though we will see throughout this book that reference is made to heeding a father's instruction, we must recognize that implicit in that is that wisdom speaks through the father or through the mother. These are wise parents. These are the people who have taken on board the message of the Proverbs and have applied them to their own lives and proved the wisdom of them. And so in the first place, we understand the compiler teaching us that we must listen to wisdom. Listen to wisdom. Hear, my son, your father's instruction, and forsake not your mother's teaching, for they are a graceful garland for your head and pendants for your neck. We are to listen to wisdom, words of wisdom, whoever may speak them. Here represented by a wise father and mother. More than simply listening, more than just to hear, though, in this statement is the idea of doing as well. After all, the scriptures elsewhere tell us that we are not to be hearers of the word only, but we are to be doers. It's no good hearing instruction unless you act upon it. No employer will thank you for being able to repeat word by word the instructions that they've given you if you haven't acted upon them. They don't expect you to memorize what they say to you. They expect you to act upon what they say to you. And so it is in the area of wisdom. Wise words are useless unless they are put into action. Do these things, this father and mother are saying. And these model parents, you see, have one's best interests at heart. They're speaking to one whom they love. They're speaking to one whose well-being is their concern. They're not just making up rules for the sake of it, to exert their power and influence. No, they're doing and saying what will be best for their child. This is how wisdom speaks. She speaks for our benefit, for our prosperity. These are ideas that we will see more of as we work our way through. But also, when we come to these words and we hear wisdom saying, hear, my son, your father's instruction and forsake not your mother's teaching, we mustn't think if we're of the age of maturity that these words are not for us. Once we've gone beyond our teens, that they no longer apply. He's not just addressing children. Indeed, we each, however young or however old we are, stand in the place of sons to wisdom. Wisdom speaks, and we, whoever we are, should hear, not forsake her teaching, and apply it, act upon it, do what she says. Listen to wisdom. And so wisdom speaks in verses 10 through 18, and says, don't be seduced by sin. Don't be seduced by sin. For sin's words are seductive. Sin's words entice. Sin's words are alluring. Sin's words, to use a more common term, are tempting. Just like an ice cream on a hot day. How you long to get your tongue and lips onto it. Sin's words are like that. They call out to us and say, come, come, be satisfied with me. You see, sin offers thrills and adventure. If they say, come with us, let us lie in wait for blood, let us ambush the innocent without reason, like Sheol, let us swallow them up alive and whole, like those who go down to the pit. It's offering adventure, it's offering excitement, it's offering thrills. It says to the child, come with me, we'll sneak over the fence into the neighbour's vegetable garden and we'll get some fruit and vegetables and sneak away with it. It's completely useless, of course, but sin entices, you see. Sin says to the teenager, come, come, sex is good, sex is beautiful, no one will be hurt. And you'll feel wonderful. Sin says, let's try this marijuana. Let's see what thrills it gives us. And the adventure is there. And the sense of conquest is there. And it allures. It tempts. Sin offers quick riches. We shall find all precious goods. Come, come with us. We shall fill our houses with plunder. Sin says, I know the road to wealth. I know the way to happiness and pleasure. Don't spend your hours at hard labour to earn a pitiful income. Come with us. We'll fill our houses with plunder. We'll get riches beyond imagination. We'll get rich quickly and enjoy it all in our youth. So sin entices us with lotto payouts. And sin says, let's make a few shortcuts and bring in the money and maximize our profits. Sin says, don't worry about a little lie here or there. Don't worry about genuineness of products. It's the profit that matters. It's the bottom line that's important. It's maximizing our income that should be our focus. And so sin seduces, sin entices, and it offers camaraderie. It says to those who hear, throw in your lot among us. Come on, join our brotherhood. We will all have one purse. We will have a common bank account, as it were. We will share the plunder. And we will all be rich together. And we will be happy in one another's presence. So sin has this promise of being members of a group, part of a brotherhood. It offers belonging, a place where we're accepted, a place where we have a voice, a place where we belong. And in these various ways, then, sin speaks her seductive words, entices and tempts us. And wisdom says, "My son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. My son, do not walk in the way with them. Hold back your foot from their paths." Why? Why should wisdom call out to us and say, "Don't go there. Don't have thrills and adventures in this way. Don't enter into the promise of these quick fixes and riches. Don't enter into this brotherhood." Why? Because sin's actions are destructive. They're destructive, certainly, to those who fall victim to them. The language of Proverbs is graphic, isn't it? And bold, such that we would say, "Well, whoever would do this? Come with us. Let us lie in wait for blood. Let us ambush the innocent without reason. Let us swallow them up." Of course, there's a victim there, isn't there? Certainly, it's destructive for them. But wisdom is concerned not only for those who are victims and the destruction that they experience, but sin's actions are destructive to those who embrace them, those who are allured by sin's words, enticed into sin's ways. They rush, wisdom says. Their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed blood. We have an English proverb, don't we? "Look before you leap." But those who heed sin's enticing words and walk in her ways do not look before they leap. They rush headlong into the mischief that awaits them through their sin. They self-destruct. And wisdom presents the absolute folly of this by presenting a picture. "It is in vain that a net is spread in the sight of a bird." We don't tend to go around catching birds in this way, but people used to. They would set a net up so that birds would fly into them. But what would be the point of doing so while the birds are looking on? The birds will fly away in the opposite direction. It's in vain to set a net and spread it in the sight of any bird. But these people, in contrast to the wisdom of the birds, these people lie in wait for their own blood. They set an ambush for their own lives. They think they're setting a trap for another, and they fall into it themselves. Indeed, this is to be found in another piece of wisdom literature in the Psalms. Psalm 7 and verses 14 to 16 echoes Proverbs 1. "Behold, the wicked man conceives evil and is pregnant with mischief and gives birth to lies. He makes a pit, digging it out, and falls into the hole that he has made. His mischief returns upon his own head, and on his own skull his violence descends." These people self-destruct. They don't realize it, but wisdom is saying the folly of it is that they should realize that what they are doing will lead not to their enrichment, not to their self-fulfillment, but to vanity and destruction. It has no good end. And so wisdom says to her son, to those who will heed her voice, Don't be seduced by sin. Oh yes, honey drips from her tongue, but she brings no peace, no lasting pleasure. Don't be taken in by her empty promises. And so the writer concludes with this moral that must be remembered in verse 19. Such are the ways of everyone who is greedy for unjust gain. It takes away the life of its possessors. This will be a recurring theme in the book of Proverbs. After all, these initial dialogues are introductory to the Proverbs that follow. They present to us the wisdom of taking on board the message of the Proverbs and applying them to our lives. And the moral of this dialogue is this: that those who are greedy for unjust gain will lose their life. The greedy end in destruction. That's the message of Proverbs. And the contrast to that, which is so frequently mentioned, as we will see throughout this book, is that it is those who work hard who are enriched. It is those who toil, who put in a good day's work, who fill their homes with possessions. You remember Gehazi? He was Elisha's servant when Naaman came seeking healing for his leprosy. After some reluctance to follow Elisha's instructions, Naaman bathed in the river as he had been told and was cured. Returning then with great joy and satisfaction to Elisha's home, he offers great riches, a reward for what has happened. And Elisha declines to accept this wealth. And off Naaman goes. And Gehazi, Elisha's servant, runs after him. Tells him a little lie. Elisha's changed his mind. He wouldn't actually mind a few things. So Gehazi takes for himself some clothing and some gold. What happens to Gehazi? He's struck with leprosy himself. That which had afflicted Naaman became his affliction. Destruction is the end of the greedy. You think of Haman. Remember Haman? No, perhaps you don't. You remember Esther? Ah, now it's becoming clearer. And Mordecai? Yes, you know the story. Haman hated Mordecai. He'd do anything to get rid of this thorn in his side, as it were. He built a gallows. But what's the end of the story? Haman, in his evil intention to get rid of not just his sworn enemy, but all of the Jewish race, ends up hanging on the gallows that he had made for another. This is the outworking of the principle of the words of wisdom in Proverbs 1, 8 through 19. Their end is destruction. Indeed, this is a principle that we find also in the New Testament. Jesus spoke, saying, "Those who live by the sword will die by the sword." Or to put it in the language of the Apostle Paul, in Galatians chapter 6 and verse 7, he says, "Do not be deceived. God is not mocked, for whatever one sows, that will he also reap." For the one who sows to his own flesh will from the flesh reap corruption. But the one who sows to the Spirit will from the Spirit reap eternal life. What do you want? You know, the one who listens to sin's enticing words wants riches, wants pleasure. Nothing wrong necessarily with those desires. But wisdom says sin's seduction will not lead to either riches or pleasure. Perfect pleasure and lasting riches are found only in Jesus Christ. He is the one who can make us truly happy, and he is the one who can enrich us for eternity. And it's in his wisdom, his words, that we are to build our lives. It's on them that we are to base our lives. Indeed, Psalm 1 presents us with the alternative. Or perhaps it would be better to say that it expresses in fuller detail what Proverbs 1 hints at. Yes, Proverbs 1 gives us this very clear indication of the destruction of the wicked, but what of the righteous? Blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the wicked, nor stands in the way of sinners, nor sits in the seat of scoffers. There's an echo of Proverbs 1, isn't there? But his delight is in the law of the Lord, and on his law he meditates day and night. He is like a tree planted by streams of water that yields its fruit in its season, and its leaf does not wither. In all that he does, he prospers. This is what we want, isn't it? Prosperity and peace. The wicked are not so, but are like chaff that the wind drives away. The wicked will not stand in the judgment, nor sinners in the congregation of the righteous. For the Lord knows the way of the righteous, but the way of the wicked shall perish. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge. Fools despise wisdom and instruction. Are you wise? Or are you foolish?